Proper Sport at 6. You won't miss a minute, whether they matter or not.
Fire it, he's going to dummy, he's going to
yes! Curry's over the line. No, he isn't. He's lost the ball.
It's off.
He's off.
He's gone.
Go on, Johnson.
Go on, Johnson.
This is the home of full match commentary. This is Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire.
It's that time of week again, Monday night, 6 until 8, where we're talking all things rugby league. Not much to talk about this week. Referees, top of the list. We know you want to talk about referees. We don't as a rule, but has the time come? Does a video referee need to change? Do the refereeing standards need to change? Does a cannonball tackle need outlawing for the good of the game before someone really does get hurt? Will Wakefield hang on to their top four? They've got a huge clash with St Helens on Thursday night. Tyler Randall, could he prove to be the biggest signing of the season for Trinity? Wigan keep their hopes alive by beating their nearest and dearest, St Helens. The Ben Barber experiment. Was it worth bombing Theo Farge and the youngster Richardson out of the side to get him in? Warrington and Hull KR can touch Super League for next season, but what about Widnes League, Catalans and London? Well, London badly done to on Saturday night in the capital. What do you make of it? We're talking Dream Team as well. We've got to get our nominations in for the Dream Team this weekend. Who should we be picking? Let us know, as always, at RL on RY. You can get in touch on the Radio Yorkshire Facebook page. It's a week and counting until Big Nigel will be in the studio. Want your thoughts on what you want to discuss? It's sure to be a hectic 2 hours next weekend. But this week we've got another special guest, Steve Mascord, the Australian journalist, is with us to tell us all about his new book, Touchstones, which is out tomorrow, published by our very own Phil Kaplan, with his new, all brand spanking new haircut. The accusation, Mr. Schofield, he must have a fancy woman, surely.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, he's looking dapper. I'll tell you what, is Phil Kaplan going to be the new James Bond? I'll tell you what, Phil, but you have got a massive fan. You have got a massive fan. So to us, Richard Chaw. Richard Chaw, and also to Mark Wilson. You spoke to one of our biggest fans, I would say, up in Cumbria, in Michelle. You know, she loves speaking to the boys on, what was it, on Friday night, Friday night, when she spoke to the boys. And yes, but the question is, she wants to ask the three lads is, did she sound as though she knew what she was talking about? Did she sound as though that she was a proper rugby league person, or was she just talking rubbish?
That's a question many people have been asking you this week, Scotty. You upset everybody. Everybody from Widnes. We're going to talk about that and more here.
Boy, oh boy. Let me just say this. You Widnes fans, grow some crystals. Do me a favour. Your team have been rubbish all season. Lee played well against Catalan. It's only about an opinion. And yeah, and I said, Lee at home, Lee will beat Widnes. You get one game, you get one decent performance, and you think you're going to be grand final winners. Do me a favour, Widnes fans.
All that and more at RL on RY on Twitter. You can get in touch on the Yorkshire Radio Yorkshire Facebook page as well. Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire here until 8.
Want your say on all things rugby league? Radio Yorkshire, every Monday, 6 to 8pm. Opinions welcome, but be prepared to fight your corner.
Welcome along, that time of week again. We love it, you love it. Let's get stuck in. Plenty of talking points. Delighted. We've got a serious guest this week. Steve Mascord, are you well?
Who's a serious guest?
Richard.
All right, yeah. No, I'm really well. Yeah, I'm on the promo trail, whoring for the book.
Good.
So
excited. It's out tomorrow, I believe.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming here, but we finally. We had a launch on Thursday in London, which was great. Jared Sammet came. Mark Evans, the former Melbourne Storm CEO, Gary Link from the RFL, Danny Kazanji, RLEF. So I had a really good London launch on Thursday. And we're having a launch here in Leeds at Phil's Bookstore tomorrow, 5 o'clock, and all the listeners are invited, and all the people not listening are invited as well.
Yeah, well, they'll be catching up on the podcast. There are thousands of them. You've been promising to come in for a while. You're here now.
Threatening.
Yeah, I'll go with that. You are here. What do you want to talk about this week?
What do I want to talk about this week? Wow, that's valuable airtime, isn't it, when someone throws that question at you?
Well, we've got nearly 2 hours, so
what if I wanted to talk about, you know, folk music in Mauritius? Could we talk about that?
Not for long.
It probably make more sense than Scully talking about witness, but, you know, we'll move on.
I've got a question for Steve, because obviously you keep an eagle eye on events in the NRL. We have started talking about the likely makeup of the England squad, and it's going to be one of those strange ones where probably about 8 or 9 come from playing in the NRL and the rest from over here. But for, dare we mention his name, Chris Hynington, all of the England-born players who play in the NRL will not be playing in the playoffs. Is that an advantage or a disadvantage?
Well, certainly a disadvantage for me, because I do a column called Home and Away every week for the RFL website, and it's about England players in the NRL. And for the next 4 weeks, maybe only 1 week or 2 weeks, it will be the Chris Hynington column. So yeah.
What do you have for
breakfast? Hold on here. Chris Hynington's not even English. He's Australian. Also, too, he's not good enough to play for England. So why do you want to talk about him?
Because there's no one else left. I mean, he's the only one left. So I'm going to have to change the column to maybe be about England's pool opponents or something else. So the column's dead thanks to these underperforming England stars. I'm very angry at the Burgesses.
Are they underperforming? Should we, as England fans, should we be worried that Josh Hodgson maybe hasn't had the same impact this year that he did, that Sam Burgess has been in a team that has struggled and underperformed, James Graham's impending transfer is a big issue? All of the guys we're looking to win us the World Cup are not going to be playing for 7 weeks.
Yeah, but I mean, the players who excel in these end-of-season tournaments, are they necessarily the guys who had a good domestic season anyway? I mean, when you look at Jonathan Thurston, maybe last year, but often the guys who excel in Four Nations or on tours or in World Cups didn't necessarily have these breakout seasons. So I don't think we can really draw a line through that. But the bigger question, and Gary would be better equipped to answer this, is having such a long break where you don't play any finals football and then you've got a long break before an end-of-season tournament. Is that good or bad?
Oh, players want to keep playing. No. Players want to keep playing, mate. Don't worry about that. And as I say, I reckon it will be a detriment for England with the so-called bigger names and the so-called experienced better players and our world-class players, to be honest with you. You know, they're going to be coming in there really not match fitting from there. So I just think it's not going to help us, to be honest with you, to prepare for the World Cup. But also as well, though, Steve, you've been an Aussie. You couldn't care less, really, if England play well or good, bad or indifferent, couldn't you?
He wants Australia to lose.
Listen, it's like Matt Horton's wife coming here the other week saying, yeah, the whole fans felt sorry for Hulkies and Rovers getting relegated. What a lot of tosh. Hulkie, our fans never wanted Hull to win the Challenge Cup last week. It's like Steve Mascott here now, you know. Being an Australian, you don't want England to win, do you? You're delighted when Bennett Sourcoats make a total mess of our England selection. Is that right, Steve?
I would love to see England win the World Cup.
Rubbish.
I think yeah, but the best hope is that if the NRL player strike goes ahead, then you'd be unbackable. Unbackable favourites. I'd be cheering for the strike.
Yeah, but I would imagine Wayne Bennett would say, yeah, at least we don't strike for Australia. Come and play for England. We're getting paid. We're getting paid $3,000 a match, $1,500 a loss. Come and play for England.
Yeah, I would say the most unhappy people about the way the finals cards have fallen would be the affiliated states who are playing a warm-up game against England and now going to be facing the Burgess brothers, Josh Hodgson, you know, Elliot Whitehead. They'd be pretty unhappy. You know, I actually think the affiliated states should be allowed to have a few NRL players, you know, who are from those areas, like Will Chambers is from Northern Territory, Ben Barber. Oh, sorry, he's not an NRL player anymore. But, you know, it'd be awesome if the NRL got serious about the other states and actually allowed to grow the IP of those states, but that's not sort of on their agenda at all.
Very good. Richard, the Wakefield Top 4 tour is still on, my friend. It's still on.
I have to say, and you'll see this picture in the papers tomorrow, and probably on the RFL website, Prince Harry's met the England squad today. First thought was, Prince Harry meets some young offenders. They're wearing jeans, they've got the shirts all untucked. Come on, lads.
It looks like Prince Harry visits Guantanamo Bay.
Imagine the England rugby union team meeting Harry. They'd be in shirt and tie, top hats, all that.
Maybe they didn't know he's coming. Maybe he just dropped in.
Just turn up. Hey, lads. Fancy a game.
By.
Yeah.
Well, he's not as important now, or he's not going to be, is he now? Prince Harry's gone down a rung again.
Should have thought ahead and gone for Prince George. Get him involved now.
There you go.
Yeah, well, the top four tour's on. Yeah. Continues beating Salford on Friday. And Thursday, St Helens, massive game. If Wakefield win that one, what's going to happen? Mad top four.
It's a huge end, isn't it? By the way, we have got 2 free tickets to give away this evening. And for the podcast listeners, before you all start shouting and complaining You can get in. Anyone that gets in touch, retweet the show, like it on Facebook, you're going to the hat, win two tickets, courtesy of Michael Carter, for what is the biggest game of the season. It is Wakefield against St Helens. And, well, they'll be hoping to do a little bit better than they did in the last big game against St Helens.
Well, yeah, but that didn't matter then. So now it matters.
Well, it did
again.
To St Helens.
Yeah, it mattered to St Helens then, but now they haven't been good. They've lost a couple of games in a row.
Hey, listen, as well, and we said a few times on the radio show, you Wakefield fans, get yourself down there on Thursday night. What more can they do? What more can Michael Carter do? What more can Chris Chester do? What more can the players do? They're in the top four. Let's just go back two seasons. Bloody hellfire, they were playing in the £1 million game. They just beat Bradford, you know, the Bradford Bulls on there. Come on, you Wakefield fans, get yourself down there. Make it 7,000, 8,000 people
isn't
there.
It
get
a
behind
shame
your team.
That the kids have just gone back to school this week and it's a Thursday night game.
It's only first week.
It's a shame.
It doesn't matter. It's a shame.
Phil, kids nowadays, they want to stay well 10 o'clock at night anyway, so that doesn't make any difference. It's not like an hour day. We have to be in bed by 8 o'clock, or you didn't get your wee a bit.
The sad thing is about that, though, then they'll miss the last 5 minutes of the game, won't they, if we've got to be in bed by 10.
It's a 16 video referee.
Yeah, but by then, hopefully, Wakefield are 16 points up and they can have an early night.
They can.
But seriously, here, come on, you Wakefield fans, get yourselves down there, eh? Doesn't Michael Carter, the coach of the players, deserve a full house? Of course they do.
We're all looking forward to the World Club Series next year being held at Bellevue and the Jungle. And the Australian team's thinking, we're not coming back.
Well, we did laugh. Lots of interaction already on social media, Rich. What's going on? What do people want to talk about?
Well, lots of people want to talk about Dennis Betts. Andy saying, Betts is moaning now because he couldn't say that last week. As in, actually, licensing, that's a good idea now. I wasn't going to say anything before. But licensing, promotion relegation is rubbish, and licensing is good. Now, in fairness, I tend to agree with Dennis Betts. I think licensing is probably a good thing for a sport which doesn't have the resources to have a top division full of well-run and well-managed financially managed teams. But everyone else seems to want promotion and relegation, so I don't know. It's a strange one.
Steve, what's the Australian view on all this promotion relegation franchise?
It's foreign to us, obviously, and we talked about it a little bit at Wembley on another station, Phil and I. But it's obviously foreign to us that you would sort of spread resources so thinly that a team in the lower division could, you know, entertain this ambition to eventually win the NRL. I mean, you can't imagine the Redcliffe Dolphins thinking they could win the NRL. So it does growing up in Australia, even though I spend at least half my time here now, I still struggle to get my head around promotion relegation, as I'm sure people here, like Cas fans, for instance, have struggled getting their head around the idea that the grand final is everything and finishing on top accounts for nothing, which is the way it is in Australia. Even Cameron Smith said when they were presented with the JJ Gilton Shield, everyone will forget this. In fact, there's a saying in Australia, no one remembers the minor premiers, you know, so, and you hear that every year. So it's a cultural thing. You grow up with one thing and it is hard to sort of think in a different way.
Scully, this franchising word keeps coming up again. Dennis Betts coming out.
I'm not having it.
Dennis Betts' witness finished bottom of the league.
I'm not having it. I'm not having franchise. No, I'm not having it. And this system, they reckon now the RFL have announced it that, the system's not going to change from there. But I'm not having franchise. No. Promotion, relegation, just keeps everybody on the toes from there. They know exactly what's going to happen from the start of the season to the end of the season. No, I'm not having franchise one little bit.
Is it sneaking back in, Phil?
I think there's a bigger issue, and it's one that you can only avoid for so long and then you have to address it. And it's about the historic roots of the sport. But we now have full-time teams and part-time teams. And there are some part-time teams that will always be part-time teams. And that may not even be the fault of anything other than the geography that they're in and the demographics that they've now got to count on. And we don't have the industries that supported them. We don't have the schools. We don't have the pubs, the clubs. We talked about people going to Wembley last week and the fact that link and bond of going down to your working men's club and saving over the bar every week until you all went as a group to Wembley. It's just not there anymore because they don't exist. And I think there comes a time when the sport has to say full-time teams operate in a certain division in a certain way with certain rewards and have to accept certain standards to be in that division, and part-time teams are given a competition that's meaningful, valuable, where they can win something, where they even get the chance perhaps to play at Wembley. But it is becoming very much like oil and water. We haven't got the players to furnish sufficient full-time teams to say that promotion relegation is a natural thing anymore. And how you manage that and how you give part-time teams the aspiration to become full-time teams might be how they get into that. So if you get an owner at a club that is currently part-time that wants to go full-time, they get the opportunity to do that. That's not strict promotion relegation in the sense that you win a game, you're in another division. The door is open to be either or, but I think we now have to structure two completely different competitions. Not necessarily next season in 2018, but if there is talk, and Steve will know more than most about the likes of New York and Montreal and Boston and San Francisco and heaven knows where wanting to come in and play rugby league in our competition, how do you accommodate them and where do you accommodate them? And I still think we've made a mistake with where we put Toronto, with what they can bring.
Well, I watched the game. I had a bit of a Twitter meltdown on Saturday. I'd had a couple of pints, so I don't mind admitting. And I'm watching it because obviously it's on this new TV station.
It's free.
Free. I'm watching free rugby league on a Saturday. Brilliant. It's not a match. I'm not. No. You know, I'm watching 16, 17 blokes from Whitehaven who are on 150 quid a week taking on a team with a budget over a million quid. It was. But
did
I'm watching it knowing what
Toronto,
the outcome is.
Yes, exactly. And I think the issue is one of duty of care as well, that it's not Toronto as a full-time team going up through the divisions. It's what trail of destruction they leave behind them. And again, I would look at the crowds in League One where Toronto aren't playing, but where they've been, and it hasn't made a significant difference. Mm-hmm. It may have done for the game when they were there, but you look at the crowds yesterday, it's not left a legacy.
I just think...
Why did you think that Toronto would boost the crowds at other games not involving Toronto? Why did you think that might happen?
Because I think when they went to London Scholars, for example, in the first game of their existence, and London Scholars rightly said, this is one of the biggest crowds we've ever had, it's 1,500, and what we're hoping is some of those that have come and watched it will come back and then watch us, so that even Toronto isn't the draw. We've brought them into rugby league, we've given them a great experience, they've been part of an event, which is what we're all chasing, events. But you look at those crowd figures, and they haven't gone back to those clubs. So what have Toronto left apart from...
One big payday.
A trail of injuries.
And also one big payday for each of those, or most of those clubs. A 1,500 crowd that they wouldn't have got otherwise.
I think we should be grateful to the fact that David Argyle's largesse seems to allow him to, with the greatest respect, waste about £750,000 this year for some dream two or three years down the line.
Yeah,
I'm not sure as a sport we're big enough to wait those two or three years.
My opinion. It is, and people say, well, if you put them in, people are going to mourn. Well, tough.
We've got
a chase.
It's what's best for the sport.
You're a journalist. What's going to get you more column inches? Toronto playing Wigan or Castleford or whatever, or I'm playing Hemel Hempstead and whoever else.
Depends what paper I'm filing for, I think. obviously the Toronto thing... It's weird because people are excited by it, but they're not sure what to make of it. And I guess you'd be forced to, if they're in Super League, you would be forced to confront the issue and come down one way or another. Whereas at the moment, people are kind of like moaning and they're not sort of sure what to make of it. You know what I mean?
Do you think they're in it for the long haul, Toronto? How long do you think they'll last?
They'll last as long as David Argyle's willing to
pay.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
But if I met David Argyle, they will definitely last long enough to be in Super League for a season or two.
Right.
You know, and then if we get like some other teams over there, and the media rights grow, then there'll be some derbies. You know, the other issue we have to discuss is like Jason Moore, who's running the 2025 World Cup in North America. He has undertaken to set up a team a league in North America. So we've got these two competing. Even the Dreamers in rugby league fight with each other, let alone the Cynics.
Well,
and
we've
the
got
Dreamers.
Three, haven't we? Because you've got the USARL who have teams already.
Yeah, they have teams already, and then you have and so. We don't have a sort of a joined up approach to America. We've got three different ways of attacking, and I've seen a blueprint for Jason Moore's league, and one of the hotspots I've identified is Toronto. Does rugby league want two warring teams in Toronto? You know what I mean?
But also, where are the players going to come from?
Well, the players for which one?
Well,
the existing league. Is basically local guys who played rugby union and some guys on working holidays, on holiday visas, who aren't allowed to be paid from Australia, New Zealand and Europe. The domestic league, which Jason Moore is going to instigate, will be guys either at the start or end of their careers in the NRL and Super League and mixed with some local players. So therefore, those local players, I guess that will leave the existing league with almost nobody. And obviously the New York team would be wholly imports like Toronto. So that's,
Yeah, right.
I mean, the thing is, like, in American sport...
I'm not going to get it.
Yeah. But in American sport, it is a coincidence if you are from that town. Like for a guy from Boston to end up playing for the Patriots is just pot luck because they have a draft. So what is an issue for people here is not an issue for North American sports fans. They don't expect the guys in their local pro team to be locals. It's not an issue for them where the guys come from. And I think these clubs, particularly the Toronto and New York, they're not like the teams here. They're not like Batley or Dewsbury or whatever, where they're, you know, it's a social club. It's part of the community, all this sort of stuff. They are like I said in a column, they're like Costa, you know, or Argos. They're a local branch of rugby league, and Argos doesn't have to get its parts from the Leeds. Or Wigan or wherever Argos gets its parts from. It doesn't matter. Who cares where they get the parts? Same with Costa. Do they have to actually get the beans locally? No. They just need local customers. And these two teams are their businesses. And pro sports is about money. It's not about players. So at the London launch for the book, Mark Evans was there, the former CEO of Melbourne Storm, who's also been involved in a number of rugby union clubs. Yeah. And he said... And his views on rugby league and expansion, which he did repeat at the launch, he said, you know, Melbourne are our only top-level team in either hemisphere that is successful from a non-rugby league area. The only one that's left, 1895 is a long time ago. We still only have one. And he said, you know what makes that happen? $80 million. That was his estimate of how much the game and News Limited had poured into Melbourne to keep them afloat. $80 million. They've had three Victorian first graders, right? In 20 years, they've had three locals play first grade. And he says anything below that is rugby league spreading itself too thin. So if the answer is a long way... A round of answering Gary's question, the future of Toronto Wolfpack is how deep is David Argos' pockets?
Fair point. Right, let's have a look. Lots coming in as well on social media.
First of all, on the witness thing, Neil says Dennis Betts has had 3 years of licensing. Where were all the players he developed in that time? Con says Betts said the same thing last year. This narrative of he's just saying it because we finished bottom is complete rubbish and a lie. We did say it, though. And they did finish bottom. And they don't want to be relegated.
No.
Alex says, franchising did not work. I think the Super 8 split has worked quite well and found it good for the game. A big shout-out to London and Hendo and the job he's doing down there. Big shout-out to the Scholars as well. 7 wins in a row now. Mm. Top of the League One Shield, which I can't remember how that's decided, whether there's a final or not.
Yeah, I was there last home games. They had 600 at Friday Night Lights, and then I was there on Saturday night. It would have been the most incredible game I've seen in my life if they'd actually won. Because they led early, like you think, and they got run down like you'd expect. They were down by 20. Mm. And then they end up losing by 2. It was incredible, you know, incredible. Anyway, yeah. keep going.
So, was incredible.
You could tell us about the contentious refereeing decisions if you were there.
Well, I was. I stood in one corner with a beer in my hand. So
did the referee.
Oof! I don't mean it.
Now he's getting ripped in.
Got a new man.
Don't mean it.
It seemed from a distance that Warrington were on the wrong end of a couple of calls too.
Yeah, and London didn't kick out.
Jared Sammet, and then Jared he hit the post with one of his conversion attempts, so it would have been 40 all maybe you can't say that, but they did look like they were a side that was they didn't have the cattle. I know people,
there were two,
a lot of players
sure.
get offended by saying using the word cattle to describe players, but they didn't have the staff to generally speaking, to match Warrington, and it looked like they were just going to get flogged. So it was Kieran Dixon's try was fantastic. It was a good night out. If you're ever in London, even if your team is not playing and you've got nothing to do, I know there's plenty of things to do in London, and it's a problem they have down there, but it is an awesome night out at Trailfinders. I plan to spend my twilight years
is
there.
Is an 8 o'clock evening kick-off
for the I don't mind a freebie. Get us an invite.
That's the first time they've played under lights.
Doesn't Radio Yorkshire give you a press pass, Gary? You could just get on a press pass.
I don't get a car park. I don't get a press pass.
To be honest, Steve.
I've got to beg.
Didn't get cake at Featherstone.
By the way, Steve Gill, I know you listen. Steve, car park, please. Steve, car park for Friday, please. You know, the legend doesn't be walking. What does it be walking into the ground?
I actually think, in fairness, legend, I have booked you on Friday, so you have got the car park.
Oh, thank you.
Because
very much.
The histrionics in the press room last time, when you didn't get a car park pass, were quite frankly embarrassing. But in relation to your question, does he get a press pass? No, we try and disassociate from him as much as we can, and unless it's absolutely necessary, like 6 late on a Monday.
Well, Robert's mentioned Saturday night. He says, London was superb on Saturday. We're very unlucky. Loved Saturday night rugby. Is this the future? People moan about going on the M62 on a Thursday or Friday. Imagine on a Saturday night what people
want. But apparently the local fans, a friend of mine, Brendan Smith, who goes to all the Broncos games, he said that the people on the forums down there were like, oh, I can't get there on Saturday night. Like, you know, they're used to Sunday afternoon and I'm too busy on a Saturday. It's like, you can't please everybody. But, you know, I guess London had that core of a few hundred fans and they're very easy to upset.
What was interesting, I thought, all the correspondence I saw about the game, there was an advert on it all about booking a local hotel. So London are obviously trying to get people to give it a bash or come along down and
it's
get
a great group
hotel.
Of people. Like we were there. Actually, we took a photo of a few people maybe having a bit too much of a good time. But there were exactly 13 in the photo, and I've now I'm looking to live in London at the moment. I go back to Sydney every month or so, but I've now got a group of like a dozen people who go there every week, and they've got all sorts of different backgrounds. Some are Aussies, some are Southerners, some are transplanted Northerners, or the children of transplanted Northerners, and it's an awesome night out. It's 45 seconds walk from the bar to the winger.
That's marvellous. Even you could do that.
That's the only stat you need.
It took me 50 seconds. I might put a sprint on.
Is it now? We've been saying this for a while. I think Endo is doing a great job down there. Is it finally becoming a club rather than just a nomadic group of people that want to play rugby somewhere?
You know, it's hard to say that. You know, I could pretend to know whether that's the case. It's hard to say that as an outsider.
Feel that way, though?
Even when they were get down by 20 the other night, people were chanting London, 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 you know, with Cockney accents. Even when they were about to get completely pulverised, you know, there was this thing like, we don't care, they're our team. And that's, amongst supporters, to me, that's means that there's a real spirit there and a real camaraderie. So, but I can't tell you, you know, within the club, I can't tell you how the owner interacts with the coach or the CEO interacts with the, you know, the players. I'd be only guessing.
It just seems like they're finally trying to put roots down.
The other thing about that is their under-19s have been really good this year. So there is some real talent coming through. They've beaten Wigan, they've beaten Leeds.
And what about Wales beating England under-16s at the weekend?
That is the result of the weekend.
And
that's really significant on both sides of that result. That Wales, that have had virtually all of their performance funding cut to nothing and run out of two semi-pro clubs and a few community clubs, have found 17 players that can beat England, who have access to Sport England money, and all of their players are already attached to Super League teams. For the first time ever. I think that says a lot about the spirit and determination of Wales to carry on and how we've let Wales down for 120 years. But also, what does that say about the standard of under-16s playing in the English game?
That's what I was just going to say. I think it's more of an embarrassment for us, to be honest with you, because certainly when you look at the candidates who are coming through from the 16s to the 18s and to the so-called 19s, and they call this so-called England pathway, or pathway to England, well, if we can't beat Wales, what chance have we got? What chance have we got? I think it's embarrassing. I do well done to Wales. Yeah, well done to them. But I just find it embarrassing that, you know, we've been turned over at under-16 level by the Welsh. I do.
That coming from a man who lost to Papua New Guinea is
And it was my fault.
Yeah.
And nearly is Welsh, but not quite Welsh enough to play in the World Cup.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Yeah. Well, how different that would have been.
Picking on me now?
No, just,
well, it's been half an hour. at RL on RY, you can get in touch on the Radio Yorkshire Facebook page. Loads of people getting involved. Rich, what do they want to
talk
about?
Yeah, lots of people very impressed with Saturday night rugby. I think there's a few more games coming because then Wakefield play Wigan on a Saturday night in a few weeks. Paul says, London have produced a lot of good players in the last few years. They've been cherry-picked by St Helens and Wigan. Neil says, London are looking more stable now. They're developing their own players and building from the bottom up rather than quick-win foreigners. Toronto, take note. I don't think a team of Canadians would quite compete, though, in League One as much as
one guy. There's one guy. I don't think you can expect him to play on his
own. Like, if Melbourne have had 3 first-graders in 20 years, then you would say there was rugby league's presence in Melbourne in 1998 was better than rugby league's presence in Toronto in 2017. Therefore, you would say that it would be a success if they have one local first grader before 2032.
And they already do.
Quinn. He hasn't started. He came off the bench. Yeah. So.
Mm. Is Saturday Night Rugby League then a good idea in the future for our broadcast partner? Perhaps instead of Thursdays, perhaps as well
or
as
even
Thursdays.
Another broadcast partner.
Do you feel that there's? I'm sensing from people, I know in the game around the edges that the clubs are getting a bit antsy about not being able to stream games which Sky don't show. That they really are going to push headquarters. Is there some way around this? Can we compensate Sky? Because I think they feel that there's a big way to commercially leverage their own games that aren't on TV anyway. It's content that's basically being warehoused by Sky. And if you look at the way sport is being consumed around the world now, basically the American sports, you subscribe to your team's games for the whole year, and it's actually sold to you directly from the NFL. And the NRL are setting up their own digital division next year, which will be the best resource media, probably outside of maybe Fox Sports in Sydney, probably equal of Fox Sports in Sydney as far as staff, technology, and all that sort of stuff. So the NRL is, I think Roy Masters wrote a column, it was called Over the Top, where you basically you bypass traditional media completely and you sell the streaming directly to the customer. And I sense that some Super League clubs are really getting very tetchy. They want to be able to access this. They think they can see that that's the way people will watch sport in future, and they want to get on board that and not have their content locked away by a media partner.
I think in the football, we have Sky have obviously got the big deal, but BT have come along and they've bought a package of rights. I think there's a feeling in this country that maybe it needs to be on terrestrial TV, a game a week or whatever, but they've got to pay and bring some more money into the sport because it's desperately short of money, isn't it?
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I mean, rugby, at the moment, all professional sports rely on media rights to pay the players and open the doors every morning. But with the changes in technology, there's a feeling that there's a jump that can be made, but it can't be made without pain, where the actual sporting organisations sell the content themselves without a partner. You can get a crew in quite inexpensively to stream a sporting event. So there's almost like we can see over there the future where we can become our own media company, because people are going to stop buying a whole day of programming, whatever it is. They're just going to buy Game of Thrones. They're just going to buy St Helens versus Wigan. That's all they want. So why don't St Helens and Wigan sell it to them? Why do we need the media partner anymore?
Is the downside of that, though, what England tried to do, or the RFL tried to do with England, with the streaming of Samoa, where they did exactly that, and there aren't enough people to justify the cost of streaming it?
Yeah, that's right. And also because you can't create a market overnight for that. So, and that is exactly the resistance. That's the quicksand between here and over there. It's the political, the backlash, the public backlash, the bad publicity, the drop in profile that you need to, the sacrifice necessary to get over there. Most sports can't do it because it's just the price is too high, And but rugby league does have a presence on Sky, and it probably does need a presence on terrestrial TV. I mean, Mark Evans, Gary, said that rugby league is kidding itself if they think they can have a State of Origin at Wembley, which people are talking about, State of Origin at Wembley. They said, if rugby league is not on terrestrial TV in this country, it can forget, the NRL can forget having big events here. The IP of the Kangaroos is a fraction of the All Blacks, right? And the way to build that IP up is to be on terrestrial TV or free TV. And sure enough, in the last few days, the NRL is finally available free. And so the NRL will look to put on big events here, and they will look to basically take money out of this market. And Super League's biggest enemy could end up being its own sport, down the track. Depending on who's running things at the NRL. At the moment, they're a bit close-minded, but they've actually got, with the infrastructure I've just described, they've got the ability to market themselves more widely.
I think the problem, a lot of people would say, is this is a sport where we don't seem to market our sport anywhere. How can we afford to do what the NRL are doing? That would just be my observation.
Yeah, no. But I think all I'm saying is the start of it, the little whispers, are that, can we please stream these games that aren't on Sky, because there's some way we could convince them to let us. That's the start. I'm not saying there's going to be Super League TV tomorrow. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I think there's some frustration out there that the content, which is That is the product. That's what rugby league is selling to people. It's warehoused.
There's a classic example on Friday. It's almost like Castleford have become too good now that they've got to the top of the league and won the League Leaders' Shield. They're not on telly. They weren't on telly against Huddersfield. They're not on telly this week in the big derby against Leeds. You would think that Castleford would say, understand that it's now the race for who joins us in the semis, but we've got a prime product here. Mm. Castleford Leeds, that might appeal to people that understand that this is... You know, the smaller town against the larger city. It's the typical sporting rivalry. Why on that Friday night, when Sky aren't featuring this game, can't we stream it on Castleford TV and pay £3.99 wherever you live? You can watch a live game.
You know what would happen, though, there is that there's no way it wouldn't be on Friday night. So if it was available through some other platform, it wouldn't go up against Sky. There's no way they would allow that. So it would. I am constantly surprised that the schedule each weekend isn't more spread out. So that you know, just as far as like radio commentary, I mean, you can have a different game on, you know, back to back on, you know, over the weekend instead of having three on at once, and then there's nothing on Sunday or one on Sunday.
And you would think Sky would say, "Hang on, Friday night's our night. You all play on Sunday." We've mentioned this before, but yeah, there's often three, four, five games on a Friday, which is truly diluting their audience.
Look, Sky are actually, compared to like Channel 9 or Fox, Sky are very laissez-faire, and they do a lot for rugby league. They make sure they show all the teams during the year. Imagine in the NRL trying to tell Channel 9, no, you've got to show Gold Coast versus Newcastle this weekend. Give everyone a fair go. You know what they'd say. Can't say it on air. So, you know, in the NRL... In the NRL, you know, you can't film inside the ground if you're not a rights holder. Yet here, you know, anyone with a media pass can pretty much go and interview anyone anywhere. You know, there's no restrictions. Sky are actually very, very helpful to the game. They help the game, and it's standard commercial practice that if you buy the rights to something, you have the right to stop it being aired. You know what I mean? Like, that is standard commercial practice. I'm not saying Sky are being unfair there, but I can see the clubs are going, well, we're putting on these things. I know people will watch it. We can make money from it. Like, why can't we show it? You know, why can't we show it?
But so you do something called Stupid Saturday most weeks, and the NRL at least have the good sense that if there are three games on the same day, to overlap them so that you can watch or listen to all three.
Yeah, but that's commercial. They're all on Fox.
We don't do that.
Yeah, because if the radio stations who want to call the games back to back, if they gave Super League as much as the Fox are giving the NRL, I'm sure they would put it on in midnight. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's all about money. You know, and that's their product is a whole afternoon of rugby league. And same as like the reason that the 4 o'clock game the reason there was a 2:30 game and a 4 o'clock game on a Sunday was that Channel 9 wouldn't let Fox have anything on air while their game was on. So when the 4 o'clock, and what they did is they delayed it an hour, inserted a heap of ads, and then they thought it would keep people watching the news. And so we had a delayed game as recently as 2 years ago, which they paid a fortune for because they wanted more people to watch the news. And so when that went live, then the other game had to move to another slot because there was so they didn't compete. You know, so it's all about money. You know,
Is that what America can bring?
Go on then.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
I mean, presumably, you know, we talk about franchising or whatever, but the fact is that, as Mark said, we're a sport that isn't cash rich at the moment. Should we be encouraging these negotiations with whoever is running a New York franchise and whatever else may be out there, where Toronto have taken the sport? Because the one thing they can bring is instant finance through television.
Yeah, the New Zealand, New Zealand, no matter how badly they go, if they lose 60-0 for two seasons in a row every week, they would never get kicked out of the NRL because they bring in so much rights for Sky. But what I find bizarre, and this is like, it's a hand-to-mouth mentality that exists everywhere rugby league is played, that you expand the comp, but you don't give them a share of your rights money. So, it's like you can come to the party, but you got to stay in that room. I don't want you talking to any girls. Okay, come to the party, but just talk to these three guys and don't even look at the girls. You know, it's like if you're going to have, if you're going to invite someone into your competition and rights funding is how you finance professional sport, how can you invite someone into your competition and not give them a share of rights money? I think if Gateshead had have got a fair share of rights money when they came in instead of being excluded, they might have, gone better. They might have not had to merge with Hull and then disappear, you know. So I find it bizarre that you invite a team into your competition, then you're your main. What I say, if Toronto and New York can't have a share of Sky money, then none of the other clubs should get a share of the TV money when they sign in America. When they finally sign a deal in North America for millions of dollars, give it all to the two clubs over there, because, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, you know?
Okay, fair enough. Right, yeah. I want to talk. Oh, go on.
When the State of Origin comes over here then and played at Wembley, is there a chance Curry will actually be allowed on the pitch to, you know, meet the players and everything? Like, because he's more royalty, revered in Australia than here.
Gary should have a column in Australian media. I keep. I'll, what's a good percentage you give a manager? I'll get you a column in Australia.
25% you'll get.
Oh, really?
There you go.
I've told it now. Let's give it.
And now it's on air.
Yeah, it is on air.
Legally binding, that, Steve.
Well, 25%. I put myself available for the World Cup for the commentary on the Channel 7 have got it. But anyway, now there's not even come back and said yes.
Legend.
Yes.
Brian McDermott. Is he out of order, what he said on Friday night about players, it's their sole role in the game to win penalties? Well, this coming from a coach whose team hold the ball in the back of the scrum to try and catch teams offside.
Exactly, as well. And my point about it all is simple. The player, the balls have been a mess for 6, 7, maybe 8 years now, and it's not the referees who coach these players to mess around at the play the ball. And as we all know, you know what's coming back into the game now with the cannonball tackle, and then also to that tackle around the neck, what Gareth Ellis,
the crusher tackle,
and then also to the chicken wing tackle and the crocodile tackle, whatever they do from there, and you know, but
the penguin, that's a bad one.
Whatever terminology is upon it, but yeah, the play the balls are a mess. So it's the coaches who coach these players to do these sort of things at the play the ball. So it's them who's got to sort this mess out, you know. And Macca, did he have a point? Well, at the end of the day, he's one of these coaches of the 11 coaches there who's coaching these sort of techniques. They've got wrestling coaches in there now. They get 3 and 4 in the tackle to slow the play the balls down to make it a 6, 7, 8 second play the ball there. So at the end, it's not the referee's fault. It's the coaches who are telling these players to cheat.
Well,
he's saying,
and again, I'm only going with the quote that's in the paper, which I do believe he said as we were in the room at the time. My players do it too, but I don't encourage it, and I don't think whole coach Lee Radford will either. I think the point he was making that the referees are the only people that can stop it. That we've got to the point now where every tackle is a contest of appeal. Who can appeal most to the referee?
Only the referee can stop it. Why didn't Brian McDermott stop it then? I'll tell you what, the next one who falls over at the player ball, I'm going to fine him 2 weeks' wages.
He's not in his interest to do that, though, is it?
He would do that.
Well, what's his point?
His point is that it's getting too easy for teams to come out of their own goal line. Because the player who is being tackled is moving around like a fish out of water, trying to appeal to the referee to give him a penalty so he doesn't have to do the hard yards. By the same token, I would say the bit that he didn't mention was there's also a half-back behind that throwing his arms up and down saying he's not been able to play the ball quick enough.
I have never once seen Matt Parcell ask for a penalty all year.
But what he's saying is the referee doesn't give a penalty there because it only harms the people that are thrashing about on the floor. By giving those penalties, it's taking something that's essential to the game out of it.
But you see, also, like me and Mark, we had a debate.
That's a useful debate.
We had a debate about 5 or 6 weeks ago where now, you know, Steve mentioned the cattle, and I'll say, you know, the donkeys don't do the hard yards away anymore. It's the wingers looking to get the quick play to balls, and if they get the quick play to balls, that's where the penalties come from. But teams nowadays as well, the way they are structured, the way they're coached, they're not looking to maybe create from 40, 60 yards away from the opposition try line. They're looking to get the penalties for that field position. But again, it's cheating. You know, and they say what they are doing now, they're begging the referee, saying, come on, he's holding me here. And the players are questioning the referee, saying, this is the penalty. And the referee is lying down the players and giving the penalties. He's cheating. But the people who can stop it, it's the coaches. It's as simple as that. And I say, Macca, yeah, he made a good point from a point of view where, yeah, the play the balls are a total mess. But listen, your players are your
players. This seems a very strange day to do it, Rich, doesn't it? And I know people say, well, they've won, he's not sour grapes, he's coming out with it. But to me, it's smacked of a coach who says, we're going to be playing these in a few weeks, I want them monitored at the play the ball.
But surely, like, players, I know there's a degree of sportsmanship, but in professional sport, players will do whatever they can to get a result. And it's up to the referees to enforce it and to stop that process. Also, teams giving away penalties when they're in their own 20, you know, because they'd rather concede two than six. I mean, that happens in the game too. I mean, do we doesn't happen? You know, and I don't know how you're going to convince a professional coach to tell his team to not do it. I think it's down to referees to enforce, you know. Like, that's their job. They're supposed to be impartial, you know.
I think the incident he was referring to was one where the person that was supposedly making the yardage had almost, in his eyes, and I can't remember which incident it was, deliberately dropped the ball on the tackler because he was appealing for a penalty to get out of the hard yards. Yeah. And Brian McDermott, being of the old school of that is an important part of the game, that what they would call the dirty carry. It's integral to how you get out of your own 20-metre line.
I just think it's dangerous when you're coming out with an example, and another one you mean, and he did just drop the ball. One of his players headbutted someone.
Oh,
and
yeah.
has been charged and should on the night have been sent off.
Yeah, absolutely. But those two
you can't have it always.
No, that's. I think he was making the point about there's too many tackles now that are following that process of we don't have to do the hard work to get out of our own area. But I think the Borough thing, I don't think that'll be condoned by anybody at Leeds.
Because I'll tell you what, I was speaking to Mal really, I think it was about 3 months ago, and it was a good suggestion what Mal came up with, and I know you all go, that's never going to work, but Mal really says you can only have two men in the tackle. There's only two men who can make a tackle.
Phil said that earlier on, didn't he? What about that suggestion?
There's only two men who can make the tackle, and that's it.
And that gets rid of the cannonball.
It gets rid of all the messing about, because one thing for sure, the first man will chop him down, he'll go the second man if he stood there, or whatever, you know, try and slow the play of the ball down. So that's a great suggestion.
If two men are holding him up, you don't need a third man in then to bring him down.
There'd be either score lines that go up, wouldn't they? There'd be more late offloads, more breaks.
But isn't that what we're, if
the first man chops it down, Steve, there won't be, because they can't pass the ball like a Lee Crooks, you know, six, 8 inches off the ground or this sort of thing. So, no, I don't think there would be a lot more of a passing game, because, you know, players can't pass anyway at times nowadays, can they?
They can't pass, they can't
They're not allowed to.
Social media, what's going on?
Lots of stuff. Kev says, things that need to be sorted out for 2018, play the balls and players faking injury. Is that the thing at the dropout where we have another 3 hours waiting for someone because they've got
I've got a solution. I've got a proposition. Goal kicks now. As soon as a try scored, 1 minute kick clock.
You've got shot.
There's a shot clock for line dropouts in the NRL.
Yeah, and scrums. I think you should. Scrums, yesterday, they knock a minute off the clock and you're still waiting 3 minutes from to kick the goal. Yeah. And you think, hang on, mate, if I offered you £1 million, you'd kick that 100 times out of 1. Just get on with it and kick it.
As much as we've moaned all season about games on Sky on a Friday, kicking off at 8 and finishing at 10:30.
Yeah.
Yesterday, he kicked off at 3:05 because I watched it on the clock in here. First half finished at 4:00, didn't it?
Yeah. There was one injury to Ormondroyd. He did it. He hurt his shoulder. Other than that, there were no actual the physio's on assessing him. Nothing. The game finished at 5:00. It's ridiculous.
Simon says players and coaches are just too good for the rest, who have no idea what's happening at the play of the ball. It's like the dark arts. The dark arts of the play of the ball. Huddersfield and Hull are brilliant at getting penalties by moving forward and flopping about like dying fish when tackled. Middlemen have no idea what's happening. They haven't played the game and have been kidded into giving penalties when they have no idea what's happened.
Is that where two referees works better in Australia? Irrespective of whether we've got the amount of referees, that there is one detail to look at the play of the ball. Is it quicker?
Yeah, it hasn't stopped criticism, as you'd be aware. In fact, the criticism's probably gone up of referees, and I think it's just in our DNA, in our sport particularly, to just blame the match officials. And the higher the stakes, the more we blame the match officials. But certainly, you do see things here where you go, they just play on? Like, you know what I mean? Whereas in the NRL with the two refs, you know, it would have been detected. So that's definitely the case, you know. But, you know, the more bits in a machine, the more bits you put in a machine, the more things it can break. And it's certainly not perfect, the two-referee system.
Mm. Russ wants to know how many players are involved in the crocodile tackle.
Well, it's the call of a crocodile tackle, don't they? Where they twist them round or something. Yeah, that's what they call them. All the silly names you're having for them.
Just turtles when you put them on their back.
Yeah, that's what we used to call it nowadays. Turtle, yeah. I play with a few turtles and all sorts of things. They weren't very good.
Gareth says, as a fan who went to Toronto, I've got to say it's one of the best experiences of following Hunslet for over 30 years. There's some positivity.
It is fantastic. I went to their first home game, and just all of the things which bring people down in rugby league and traditional areas are absent. They don't even know they don't even, a lot of the fans don't even know about one rugby, let alone two. You know, they don't boo the referee. They don't know. I mean, like a guy threw a punch after being sent to the sin bin, and everyone just went, "Oh, yeah." Like, I'm like, I said that's like 16 weeks. You've been sent to the sin bin, and then you punch someone.
Well, to be honest,
and they're like, "When we go to ice hockey, we see that every week." You know what I mean?
Say, Steve, I was watching the game on Saturday to say it was on feature, and I was watching, and I was looking at some of the fans' expressions, and they're like, "Oh, well, I don't know what's going on here. What's happening?" You know, they're all there. No,
they're all at their beer tent.
Yeah, all there with the pint. And they're like, well, there's a bit of music on there. There's some blokes running around away, but I don't know what's going on. What is
they've,
it?
They've been sold at an event, haven't they?
The hot dog gun.
That's the sort of feeling I got from the crowds. But, oh, well, we're here. It's just...
But I think they
much like rugby union, you know, like you go watch a super rugby game and everyone's got their back to the field, you know, just holding a glass of wine, you know. It is a bit like that, actually.
But I also think that the bit that's missing at the moment for Toronto is that element of competition on the field.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That you go into these games saying, how many are we going to win by today? And, oh, we've scored another try.
But if they can draw 6,000-7,000 when there's a foregone conclusion, then, you know, surely, I mean, people, you know, when it's going to be a contest, hopefully it's going to add a few people
and
to the grade.
There will be more away fans there.
Yeah.
Were there many people drinking wine at Featherston yesterday?
No, they're not drinking wine at Toronto either, mate.
Scott had a couple of cans of special brew, I think, under the desk.
Oh, yeah, talking about special brew. Hey, Joanne, isn't it? Joanne, yeah, I hope you're listening, Joanne, because you're not getting away with this one. You said you was all over Richard Shawright on Friday night. Not literally, but you was all over Richard Shawright from a point of view on Twitter.
Mrs. Shawright, if you're listening, that didn't happen.
You know, saying the cake, what you're going to make for us on Sunday, everybody's going to be looking forward to it. Yeah, you was on the lash on Saturday night. You was telling me you was on the 8-9% beer, had 10 cans of it, and you were hungover, and you forgot to ice the cake, and you couldn't be bothered bringing it down at Featherston. Joanne, come on. You've got to show the lads a bit of respect. Come on, being hungover is not an excuse. Being hungover is not an excuse.
Why was I on beer today if it was an excuse?
It was simply not good enough.
Biscuits being stolen? Why did I get a text?
No, hold on. Biscuits being borrowed.
Well, you're not putting them back. You've eaten them.
Biscuits being borrowed. Mark, we'll go down there in the next couple of weeks, he's going to replace them. But biscuits being borrowed. But Joanne, quite simply, love, not good enough. Being hungover.
There is the cake. It's here. I've got a picture of it. I'm salivating. It looks absolutely gorgeous.
That does look
gorgeous.
You know, she said she doesn't live far from you, Rich. She said you could go around and pick it up if you want.
When you drop him off tonight. Huh? Anyway.
I had to go speak to Ryan Hall. So
do you think the gate, like Gary's saying, you know, Wakey fans go to the game. But if you're not a season ticket holder, it's quite expensive, isn't it? Just front up at the gate and go in. Whereas Toronto, their attitude is, let's put on something that even if there was no rugby, people would go. Like, I actually think if they actually had a home game with no game, they would still get 2,000-3,000 people would go to their...
Hey, tell you what, sometimes the West Super League's played is better off not playing. It's pretty ordinary at times, isn't it? Yeah, it's pretty ordinary at times.
But what could you do, like, if you wanted to get people through the gate at Bellevue for a reason other than the game? Like, you know, like Toronto did with their beer festival. Like, if you put something on is it Thursday or Friday, in Wakefield,
Thursday,
on a Thursday night, and that was going to attract... aside from a game of rugby league, would it be? And then, once we figure that out, put it on inside the ground.
To be honest, the Origin Legends game, which was on last week, had things like falconry in the ground, and as well as the usual food stalls, and it's just another attraction that's there, and kids go, oh.
But no matter what you put, you could put reformed Oasis on inside the ground, but if people don't want to, if it's too expensive to get in, you know what I mean? They're not going to get in. You're not going to go in. So that's the thing.
We have seen horse racing do this now, aren't they? Yeah. They have the band on after.
Yeah, yeah.
30,000 people, most have never probably had a bet in their life, but they're there, they pay the money to get in. And the
motor racing do that in Australia, so they'll have like a big band, like it'll play one show in the whole country, and it'll be at like the something 1,000. It'll be at some motor racing show, and you get people in there who couldn't give up, you know what, about motor racing. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Hey, I tell you, well, I 3 years ago now, I did the naked run and the press ups on the 25, the halfway line, the opposite 25, the trial line, you know. So, what do you reckon? That for entertainment? What about the Radio Yorkshire team doing, you know, a bit of entertainment, you know?
Make it clear, I'm just a guest, not part of the team.
You know, the naked runs, that'll be, that would pile them in. That would stack them in, don't you think?
Sex does sell.
Well, the last thing...
Unfortunately, not when it looks like it's going.
The last thing...
The naked room got plenty of attention, don't worry about that, because he's showing the press-ups, boy oh boy.
The last thing that got big crowds in Wakefield on Thursday nights was Foxy Boxing at Rooftop Gardens, but they've closed down now, and you're not allowed to do that anymore, so...
Ah, well, there you go, there
Mark,
you
can
go.
Can I just get this shout on this?
Yes,
please. Important. Yeah, so, just a shout here, this Sunday... The 10th of September, there's a charity rugby league game, and it's all the funds are for Macmillan, and they say the charity game on Sunday at 1 o'clock, kick it off at 1 o'clock at the Corinthians, and it's against the Middleton Old Boys, against a local select Old Boys team. As I say, all the proceeds are going to Macmillan, that's at the Corinthians this Sunday, 1 o'clock kick-off, 10th of September. All the best, boys.
Very good, yeah, hope you have a good day. Don't forget, if you get in touch tonight with the show on Twitter, at RLONRY, or on the Radio Yorkshire Facebook page, or via the podcast, you give us a retweet, a like, a share, whatever it is, you'll be entered into the draw. Two tickets, hottest tickets in town, surely Wakefield against St Helens on Thursday night. It's live on Radio Yorkshire from 7. And on Friday, we're down at the Jungle, Cass taking on Leeds. It's another busy, busy day. Don't forget, get your questions in for Big Nigel Ward. He's in next week.
Proper sport at 6 on Radio Yorkshire. If it's good, we'll tell you. If it's rubbish, we'll tell you. This is Radio Yorkshire, the only place for honest opinions on the greatest game.
Welcome back to Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire. It's Mark Richard, James Bond, Phil Kaplan, the legend Gary Schofield and Steve Mascord with us tonight. Full house as always. Don't forget, next week, Nigel Wood joins us, 2 hours live in the studio. Want your questions to come in, what you want us to ask him. We are going to try and pin him down on all the key topics. Don't forget, we're giving away two tickets tonight to watch Wakefield against St Helens live in the Super League on Thursday night. All you've got to do is get in touch on social media, at RLONRY. You can get in touch as well on the Radio Yorkshire Facebook page. Don't forget, if you are listening on Facebook, we do have one or two odd issues with the sound. You can always just go on radioyorkshire.co.uk and watch us there. That's quite simple. You can download the Radio Yorkshire app. And you can download the podcast all there. Right, social media, let's get cracked on then. Because I want to talk about who's going to get relegated. I want to talk about who's going to get promoted. So where are we going?
Well, I've got some questions for Steve. So
let's crack them out of the way.
Robert says, does Steve think Melbourne will win the grand final?
Yes. They'd have to. There are bigger certainties in Australia at the World Cup.
Wow.
There you go.
I'll just ask Steve as well, because... and I say the best hooker I've seen and played with Benny Elias, but I'm just going to say Cameron Smith. Boy, oh boy!
Yeah, he plays.
How good is he? Surely when he finishes in this offing, he'll be the immortal. But how good a player is Cameron Smith? Is he making the most NRL appearances this week as well? But what a sensational player!
Yeah, isn't he? At the weekend it was his 355th. Yeah. The best thing I'd say about Cameron Smith is that he plays rugby league as if it's not a contact sport. Mm,
yeah.
You know, to him, it's not a contact sport. He might as well be playing Scrabble. You know what I mean? It's like, he doesn't feel the collisions. He actually plays with his intellect, you know? So, he's certainly the best hooker I've seen, and I was big fan of Benny, big fan of Steve Walters, big fan of Danny Medeiros.
Yeah.
Steve Walters kind of changed, you know, hooker play, didn't he? Cameron Smith, incredible, and he's obviously the captain of Australia, and at the moment, he's also leading the sort of the players' union in their battle with the NRL over pay. So it's kind of an interesting conflict there, you know. We all hope. I mean, I believe the captain's call for the finals was today, and the players went. So that was one of the first things they were perhaps threatening to boycott. So hopefully they'll settle their differences. Everyone will be available for the World Cup, aside from Anthony Milford and a few people like that, and we'll see the best players.
Okay. Very good. Any more?
From Luke, what does Steve think of Warrington's NRL signing? Cheers, Luke. Sitaleki Akawala. I asked on the show 2 weeks ago, but Phil hadn't heard of him.
He's a handy first grader, a hard-working player. I've watched him play a number of times. I can't say that I can remember a special thing he did or something. You know, I can't say I did, but obviously from the point of view of Tony Smith and Warrington, they wanted someone who's got experience and, you know, is used to those NRL systems and can do all those things. So I wouldn't say that he's like an out-and-out superstar, but often, you know, some of the guys, you can't always predict how someone's going to perform in Super League by their resume in the NRL. Some of the guys disappoint, and some of the guys are better than we expect.
I'd say, just another thing as well, one thing I'm very, very surprised at here, and they've denied it, haven't they, Warrington, but bringing Michael Maguire over to Warrington, what the hell is all that about? Honestly, what is all that about? Have you seen the way South Sydney have been playing? Do me a favour.
Have you seen the way Warrington have been playing?
But they do try and play a little bit with a ball. Michael Maguire, do me a favour. I'd rather watch paint dry.
Well, apparently he's now, the rumours moved on, he's going to the Gold Coast now, so you don't need to worry about that now.
Why would the Gold Coast want him? You know, the way that he wants to play the game, he's just literally dull and boring, Steve.
Well, dull and boring isn't necessarily bad, but effective is the big question, isn't it? And, you know, that sort of style that won the 2014 Premiership for South Sydney hasn't been as successful since, and they were absolutely flogged a couple of weeks ago.
Melbourne flogged them 60 points.
Yeah, they did. So a lot of people think that he won't see out the off-season, Michael Maguire. I know he's got a good relationship with Shane Richardson, and it would be a hard call to terminate him. But, I guess if there was another job for Michael to go to, it would make the process a bit easier for Souths. And then the question would be, who would Souths get, you know?
Neil Henry.
Yeah, swap. A direct swap. Yeah. That's a very good rumour. Let's go with that one.
Yeah, let's get it. You heard it here first.
That'll be out overnight.
So, just a quickie then. You were trying to speculate some rumours. So, what do you reckon Richie Agar maybe going to St George Illawarra as assistant coach?
That'd be great. Mm. Yeah. Isn't it weird? I've never known a assistant coach to get the blame for poor results like Richard Agar did. Oh. The Warrington fans just went, oh, it's that new assistant coach. That's the thing that's strange. Yeah. It's his fault.
I mean, Richard Agar gets the blame for our Facebook everything. Not working properly.
Hull fans don't like him. Wakefield fans blame him for everything. Poor Richie. I hope he does well at St. George.
If that's true and he gets that job, well, hopefully he'll make a success of it, because he's very bright and intelligent. He knows the game inside out, doesn't he, Richie? So, let's hope he may be the first of maybe many, eh? Yeah. First of maybe many.
Steve's asked, and a few of us, I think Joe asked as well, what does Steve think of Tyler Randall? Did he make much impression down on him?
Very handy player. I can actually close my eyes and I can picture him playing a lot, whereas Sitaleki Akiula, not so much. Yeah, Tyler Randall's a very handy player who probably he'll be furthering his career here and probably go back and have a very successful career in the NRL. But, you know, like, that's not the aim of all players. You know, some guys come over here, like Jared Sammet, he met his wife here, his partner, and, you know, he's got to see Europe, and to him there's more important things than being a big NRL star. And a lot of guys come over here and they, you know, enjoy the lifestyle and enjoy being out of the spotlight a little bit, and they don't want to go back, and all power to them if they don't. I'm a bit the same as them, to be honest.
I'll tell you what, when I saw Tyler Randall on Friday night, he was sensational. Mm. Oh, the pace, what he showed, and I say, when he scored the try from the scrum base, 30 metres out, and just literally burned the Salford backs. They never got anywhere near him, but he's just his decision making and his passing and everything about him was, he will make a huge impression, not just for Wafer, but in Super League as well.
I think, I actually think I covered his debut. I was a sideline eye for his debut, so he's certainly a bloke who stood out. And, you know, sometimes you know if you might be behind one or two players at your club, or you come over to Super League and get to Mahe Fanua.
Matt Parcell would be a classic example of a guy who his style of play was deemed not what Manly wanted this year.
Mm.
But he had something that, for over here, is absolutely perfect.
And also, Mahe Fanua will tell you that, you know, he was in and out of first grade at Melbourne. He gets to come over here, gets to play a little bit in the centres, gets to make mistakes and make good on them. And, I mean, Mahe Fanua is a completely different footballer than he was when he was in Melbourne. Completely different. He's one of those three locally produced Melbourne first graders that I mentioned earlier, too.
Mm, good stuff. Anything else?
Here's Dawn with the most pertinent question of the moment. What's going wrong at Salford? What's happened?
They've got the suntan lotion on. Simple as that. The players just seem to be happy enough what they've achieved, and they know there's no threat of relegation. They're in the top eight, and simple. They've got the five to six on. Yeah.
I think it's more to do with the fact that is a small, exhausted squad. that have achieved to get into the eight, that did really well to get to a semi-final. But when you've only running with 26 players, you've no reserve grade. Some of those 26 players are new and young and have just arrived at the club. I mean, Chris Brining's had a great year, but you wouldn't expect him to play the amount of games that he's had straight off coming from York. And I think he's a candidate for Young Player of the Year, but you can't overexpose players at that level, and it's all catching up with them physically. Michael Dobson not playing again for them is a big miss.
Well, you mentioned Michael Dobson on, and I say, I was thinking, you know, Todd Carney's, you know, he has been a good player, you say, but at this moment in time, he's bringing nothing to Salford. Absolutely nothing.
I think psychologically they were shocked losing the semi-final of the Cup. There isn't anything else to play for, but the players that they've got to choose from look physically shattered.
And but the way Ian Watson was talking on Friday night, he's really disappointed with the attitude.
We embarrassed ourselves, didn't he?
Yeah. No desire. But I think he feels let down by the senior players. It's not the younger ones or the ones who don't, you know, play week in and week. It's the big name players who are letting him down at this moment But the fact is, Phil, unfortunately, because we don't have A teams anymore, reserve teams, whatever terminology you want to pony, nobody gets dropped. They're all in the comfort zone, so that his hands are tied.
Ben Murdoch-Masilla has been arguably their best player this year.
He looks shattered at the moment. He does.
And every week he's not in the 19 because he's injured, and every week he plays.
Well, Chris Chester said on When We Sports, Tuesday, Wednesday last week, asked him what he was expecting. He said, I'll tell you now, Ben Murdoch-Masilla will play. He's not in the team, he'll play. Makes a fast in the 19, doesn't it?
But does he look fit? When you watch him play, it looks like...
He looks sharp, yeah.
You know, they've introduced the squad system, the naming of 19 players and skimming it to 17 in the NRL this year for the first time, because we had teams would be named on Tuesday night and then you would get a squad an hour before kickoff and there was nothing in between. And the reason it's been changed is because of integrity and gambling, that you can't put a player in at the last minute, word gets out, you get on the team. So, you know, and so we've kind of introduced your system for different reasons, and then you are still allowing blokes to be dropped in at the 11th hour, which does leave things open to gambling and inside information.
Which is why we did it in the first place, on the back of the Sean Long, Martin Gleeson.
See, because back in my day, when I was playing in the Australian League, the teams were named on a Tuesday night, and you were like that, thinking, oh, did I play well enough, or am I going to keep in the 13, or I'm in reserve grade? It was quite tense, to be honest with you, you know, because at the end of the day, back in our day, you had to perform to a of an 8 or a 9 out of 10 week in and week out, or else you got dropped in reserve grade. But unfortunately nowadays that's not the case, is it? You know, and that's an ideal scenario now with Salford. We're not having a reserve team where they can drop these players.
But then we've spoken a little bit about licensing and why some people don't think it works. One of the ways it does work, and it doesn't have to be either licensing and promotion relegation, one or the other, they can work together, is as part of a licence package you would have to run a reserve grade or an academy.
I can't believe the RFL would allow clubs to run their own competition at that level, or like a coalition of the willing. I mean, there's so many things that can go wrong when you let a bunch of clubs run their own comp because they feel like it. You know, like surely the RFL's job is to preside over rugby league competitions, not have clubs organise their own, particularly professional clubs. You know, it just there's so many things that can go wrong, and you know, when you allow that scenario to happen.
There's your first question for Nigel.
How is that allowed to happen anyway, then? Because if realistically, that should come under the RFL umbrella, shouldn't it? So is that not under the RFL umbrella?
There was some debate as to whether the RFL would even provide match officials at one point, wasn't there?
It's not a sanctioned competition; they don't have to.
So why are they being allowed to play then?
I think the problem the RFL have got is that there's a will of some clubs to do it who are within the top five in terms of the strongest in the
country. Well, Hockey Out brought it back now to give their players game time.
And there's a will amongst the others within the top five or six not to do it. And the RFL, rather than say, we will make a decision and command you to do it, is almost abdicating that responsibility to allow the clubs to say, well, there's four of us will put our hands up. Oh, all right, we'll put fixtures together for you, but it's not a fully sanctioned tournament.
It's like a pre-season in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
You know, trial matches.
And we had Hull KR players playing for St Helens the other week, which was just to get them game time.
Yeah, rubbish. It's a joke, isn't it?
Okay, well, Salford's good start means they're not going to get relegated. They're in the eights, the super eights, if you like. Who is going to fall through the trapdoor? Because Hull KR They're a win away now, Scully.
They are, yes. Away. Yeah, and this is what they've been working for. As we all know, the mad 2 minutes last year, don't we, at Craven Park, but that history now. This is where Hulke are wanting to be. This is what they are prepared for. This is all the talk from last year, you know, the pre-season, Tim Sheen's coming in from there, and I say keeping the experienced players, adding that bit of quality. They've added a so-called bit of quality, you know, to prepare for these. So the Super 8s, fixture list has been kind to them. They couldn't have done any more. Four wins from four, 8 points. Now the big test for them, as everybody knows, 3 games to go.
Then Warrington away.
Well, I'd say that they'll be hoping to make sure the champagne bottles are open this Saturday night, you know, come what, it's a kick-off at 5 o'clock, come what, half past seven or so. They'll be celebrating from there. But this is what Hulke are prepared for. They've got themselves in the position, what they wanted. Now it's up to them. It's as simple as that. Are they good enough? Well, Widnes, you know, I was a little bit surprised that they beat Lee yesterday after the way that Lee beat Catalans from there. But, yeah, Widnes, I say they'll want to make sure that they get in the top three, so they won't be going there lightly. But at the end of the day, Hulke are aware what they want to be. It's all in their hands. Can they beat Widnes? I sure can. And certainly when you looked at the crowd, what they brought yesterday at Featherstone, you know, just, was it 2,200
I think
fans?
There were about 2,500 there.
It was sensational following. So you don't have any God-given right to be in Super League, but one thing for sure, Hulke, what I will say is, they do bring something to the competition.
Should they kick off at the same time?
Yeah.
There's quarter of an hour time difference between Hulke and Lee.
Yeah, it don't make much difference anyway. Mm. Well, Lee are going to be Warrington, aren't they?
Is there some suggestion? This afternoon I was at Rugby AM promoting my book Touchstones, out tomorrow.
Don't worry, you'll get a chance.
No, I'm just saying, and Alex was asking me about Catalans. Is there some suggestion that they'll just fold if they're not in Super League? Is there any suggestion?
I think the issue that they would have is the corporate backing. Mm. Which would include Bernard Gouache's money himself. So there's a likelihood that if they weren't playing in Super League, they would drop at least half their crowd. Mm. That then makes them slightly less attractive to one of their biggest sponsors, who is the tourist region around Perpignan, because you wouldn't be getting the same level of away fans coming, you wouldn't get the same number of home fans in the ground. I think the television rights would come up for an issue, would be actually bothered about filming the championship. Mm. Probably not, even allowing for a Catalan to lose Derby. I think the issue would then be, if there wasn't that level of corporate support, how viable is the club? But then you could put that against Widnes and Salford as well, if they were to be the teams that were relegated. I know Salford got away with it by a drop goal last year, but everybody was saying, if they'd gone down, was that the end of Salford? If Widnes go down, are the backers going to stay? If Catalan go down, is there a fair chance that the commercial...
Has Bernard Gosch been asked, can you guarantee that a team will be on the field next year? Has anyone asked him?
No. I think there's more than one team you could aim that question at, isn't there?
So licensing, then?
Possibly.
But we're sticking with the eights for another year, so that's good, because we're out the eights. But
We haven't defined what minor means.
Do Catalans add more to Super League than any of those clubs previously mentioned?
And don't know.
The answer would be yes, because there isn't a TV company that specifically covers Widnes, or Salford, or Wakefield, or Castleford, or Leeds.
And we don't know what the TV contract says with BeIN Sport. Does it say we will show Catalans games, or does it say we will show Catalans Super League games?
Don't know how much money they're paying into the central pot either. Is that money staying within French game?
Who do we think's going to go down then? Scully? Well, give us a two for the £1 million game then.
Well, the £1 million game is Lee and Catalans, and if the game's played at Lee, the Catalans are going, for mine.
Okay.
Yep, Catalans are going.
Steve, any thoughts?
Lee and Catalans, and maybe Lee go down.
I would probably agree with that, especially if that game was in the south of France at very short notice. That makes it really tough for Lee.
But what if it's not in the south of France, Phil?
Well, they've not travelled well, have they? The big advantage for them yesterday was not conceding a point against Halifax. I think, as a coach, that's something you can build on, not something they've done this year.
If Lee go? Will Derek Beaumont stick with Lee?
No.
If Lee go down, will he stick with Lee?
He may, but not to the level of investment. Why would you invest in something that isn't the same product?
Ask David Argyle.
But what happens this week? Because, obviously, if Widnes win at Hulke Ar and Lee lose at Warrington, or the other way around, Hulke Ar win against Widnes. This is the great thing about this. There's so many permutations. People were pulling us up last week because we said Hull are definitely in the top four, and I was saying no, they're not going to make the top four. We can change our mind on a weekly basis because everything changes week by week.
I'll tell you what as well, when we would, you just look at the top four there now, and I think we've waited long enough, haven't we, to rip into St Helens, to be honest.
Well,
with
hold
you,
on, we're talking about the other one now. Yeah?
I thought we were going to get to the four.
We will do. We will do. Well, people want to know about you tipping up Widnes, because you put a mocker on them, apparently.
We had a tweet
hold
about
on,
this.
Hold
on,
Paul, Paul says, as a Widnes fan, can I ask if there's any chance Gary could tip Hull KR to batter us on Saturday, please?
Are you Widnes fans, honestly? You've been very, very ordinary all season, and as I say, at the end of the day, we're all entitled to his opinion. When you look at it, the way that league turned away Catalans, and as I say, Widnes, you've been pretty ordinary all season, so don't deny the facts. Don't deny it. And I say it was at Lee yesterday, and I said, yeah, the way that Lee are, and I said, just that bit of consistency, they'll beat yesterday. You get a good win, and you think you're going to be champions. Widnes fans, please do me a favour. I'm a tipping OKR to beat you on Saturday. No, I'm not. I'm tipping you to beat OKR. Okay, then.
Are you
there
doing
you
that out of spite?
There you
go.
There you go, Widnes fans. I'm tipping you to beat Widnes on Saturday. Okay, beat OKR on Saturday, Widnes fans. There you go.
Yeah, that's right. Disaster.
Yeah. Never mind when the squads are named. It's when you decide who's going to win.
Dennis Pretz will turn up at his press conference this week with a black hanky on.
Again, it's laughable, isn't it? You know, supporters blaming me, you know. There's people rushing down
the bookies outside.
Honestly, you know, it's amazing that supporters are blaming me because, you know, the team, because I tip them to win and they get beat.
Well, it's the great irony of people having to go at Scurry and saying, where's your medals, when Scurry wasn't winning those medals was the last time Widnes won anything anyway, but...
Yeah. There you go.
Kevin says, Lee's players aren't fit to wear the shirt. Get the P45s ready, because they're all going to get the sack when they all lose their jobs.
Well, we'll see. And see that Kieran Cunningham effect soon wore off, Phil.
Yep. Obviously, 1 week wonder.
No headphones. Nick says, well done, young Brandon Morby, nominated for Young Player of the Year at Halifax, who's been fantastic for the team this term. Also, Richard Marshall's been nominated for Coach of the Year. Truly remarkable with the funds he had available this season.
Let's hope they use the funds they've got for next season better than they did last time. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been in the mess that they were in this time.
And they and Featherstone will be playing in the £50,000 match.
They will.
Are there enough quality players, asked Simon, to run a competitive reserve grade, or will it mean the death for dual registration and then the death of championship clubs like Featherstone that rely massively on loan and dual reg players?
Well, they keep more players in the game, won't it? Coach is always telling me they're losing players out of the game because they can't offer them a Super League contract maybe at 19. But
I think rather than a reserve grade, we should probably look at under-23s.
Yeah.
With maybe three overage players on top of that. Because, yes, one of the issues why reserve grade wasn't deemed to be popular by certain clubs and they didn't want it to go ahead was because a lot of their squads were filled with players from community-based clubs to fulfil fixtures. And they weren't ever going to be Super League players. So the money that was invested into reserve grade didn't have that return.
Yeah.
And that's why, for some clubs, sending players out on dual reg or loan, where they were actually playing competitive games every week against men, normally it was the younger element that were going out doing that, fulfilled the purpose of what a reserve grade would. But not everybody operates in that way, and we've got this ridiculous situation where some want a reserve grade, some want dual reg, some want loan, some want feeder club, some want under 23, some want under 20s. What we need is a blueprint that means that from an English point of view, but from the game's point of view, we don't start with the under 16s being beaten, because if they're being beaten... Where do you go from there?
There's like two warring philosophies here. So we're actually trying to kind of run an American-style self-contained league with big city clubs, and then we're also sort of trying to make room for a sort of 19th century village model where even the local pub team can theoretically win Super League. And we're trying to serve these two masters at the same time, and politically it's hard to choose between them. So we just flip-flop backwards and forwards and end up with neither, really, you know, just like, and I don't know, you know, in Australia, like, for instance, it's the same, like, you know, we've got sort of a little bit of a an English system where, you know, we've got local boys playing for their local clubs, but we have a salary cap. We have a salary cap without a draft. So again, sort of playing lip service to a bit of American sporting tradition and a bit of European sporting tradition, and if you get a whole lot of money behind it, then you can make it work. But without the money, you're trying to please everybody, and it gets messy. I mean, the big thing with structures, we should look at geography too. We don't think about geography. Surely we should look at using the resources to serve the idea of the footprint, an idea of an ideal footprint for rugby league. So, you know, you have a reserve grade team. You know, it could be an instrument of expansion, or at least occupation. You know, where the reserve grade team could actually build a relationship with the town and actually get some support. But then, as you say, the reserve grade team is Wigan's reserve grade team. Would it be able to beat a team at the bottom of the championship? Probably.
It would be competitive in League One.
So should it be in League One? I don't know.
Well,
like,
there is an argument that says taking Wigan to Oxford actually does more for Oxford.
Yeah.
Rather than necessarily Oxford playing Hemel.
Yeah.
Because it's the Toronto thing. It's the name you're taking. Somebody who might not have heard of rugby league might have heard of Wigan and go, oh, our team are playing Wigan. Oh,
yeah, exactly.
That.
Yeah.
So there was a proposal at some stage that maybe the four or five clubs that have the best junior development put their reserve grade team in what would effectively be League One. The other model that seems to work, you mentioned Redcliffe earlier. There isn't an aspiration among the QRL teams, who are self-contained bodies that serve communities, who play in a competition where they've even got a side now from Papua New Guinea, to aspire to be in the NRL.
Because it's an American triangle where you've got the pros leagues at the top, and then you've got the minor leagues underneath.
But they play in a stadium that is state-of-the-art for the area. It holds representative games. In fact, the Commonwealth Games, I think, rugby is going to be held there. It can get up to 10,000 people when Redcliffe are going well. If a young junior kid is good, he'll end up playing for North Queensland or Melbourne, or whoever they're partnered with. And if those clubs in the NRL have got spare capacity and guys who can't get in their regular match day squad, they go and play for Redcliffe. Nobody seems to mind about that.
They don't.
So it preserves Redcliffe's history
in a
competition where they can win something, in a facility that the community value, but they're not looking to be something else.
No.
And they're happy to take crumbs off the top table in terms of players, and they're happy that there's a pathway for their best players to aspire to play for their country.
Mm-hmm.
We can't seem to come up with that.
No, because there's the heritage of promotion and relegation.
That's the model that works.
The model does work in Australia, but it is different here, you know, because you have, like I said, you've got to an Australian is a suburb. You know, you've got a suburb or a village, you know, who are competing with giant cities, and it's I guess it's even tied to the way this country developed demographically, you know, the way some towns grew into giant cities organically and others, because of geography or industry, stayed small, and the sport grew that way as well. So it's different to Australia, which sort of the towns, they started in cities and radiated out. So our sport is a reflection of the history of the demographics in Australia, whereas your sport here is a reflection of the history and demographics here.
But you've got to deal with the history and demographics as they are now, not as you.
So
not
should
as they
we
were
have
120
should
years
we have
ago.
A reserve grid? Yeah, on here. Yes. Whatever format it's in, should we have one?
I think there needs to be. I like the idea of a feeder club if everybody does it, and I think it's a chain. So it starts with communities in places like Ipswich and Oxford, and they get linked and allied. In fact, it actually starts in
Newtown. That's the two biggest steps.
You know, Newtown Jets, who are one of the most famous names in Australian rugby league history, every year they're a feeder team to someone else. So they play. They play in the New South Wales State League, the Intrust Super Premiership, and they're in like an area now that's a hipster area. So it's actually considered kind of ironically cool to go and watch the Newtown Jets. They even were selling KB, which is an extinct beer, for a while there, just at their games, and they get all the hipsters with the trucker caps, and now their kids go and stand on the hill, drink twoies on a Saturday afternoon and watch Newtown. Newtown are tied to a different NRL team every year, so there's a rumour that Cronulla are going to drop us, so we will open negotiations with Melbourne. And they get Melbourne and Cronulla, or whoever they're linked with in any given year, they get their cast-offs, but they have their own identity. They have their own fans. Their fans don't care that they're getting cast-offs from Melbourne or Cronulla, because they've got their own scene and their own support and their own IP and their own identity. And I think what Phil's saying is that what we want to do is we want players who miss out on Super League selection every week to have a game. So what? That's our objective, okay? Mm. So what is the best way to achieve that? I think what Phil's saying is probably the, to me, it seems like the best solution, you know?
I think there are...
And that's kind of...
Cool, I don't want to get too into this, so I want to move...
There are things we miss out on, and it's something that we probably could come back to, but there are clubs starting in various nations in Europe that could be allied to a Super League brand. Mm-hmm. That is the quickest way to get television rights. And
talks have already taken place. The Ukrainian clubs are all going to be called Rhinos, Warriors, blah, blah, blah. They're going to wear the colours and have a direct link with Super League clubs.
If you did that around a number of European nations, you suddenly have got television rights. You can sell into those nations of Super League, and then you've got money, and then the sport starts to fly.
Fair enough. That's a big leap of faith. I'll give you that, but...
Con says, why are we talking about reserve grades? We've got Super League sides who don't run an academy, including, of course, the current Challenge Cup holders. Ian says, let's get Bellevue full and rocking on Thursday. Do you think that Waitrim can get a semi-final spot, and who would they be best playing? Anyone. Bring them all on. I say anyone other than Cass, save them for the final. What we need to do is, at the final, because we've seen the cricket this week, sponsor hits player in the head with a trophy all over the BBC Sport website. They can't get enough of it. Fred... I assume he'll be presenting the trophy. Needs to hit Danny Kermond over the head with the trophy when he lifts it. Never off the BBC Sport website. It's going to be great.
There you go. We move on.
Well, I'd say one week for sure we wait for. I say they were very impressive, and I'd say Chester did a great job there. The forward pack with the mobility, but what he's got with the balance, what he's there now, and he's starting the team right. I'd say with the big men in England and Keegan Hurst, he's got to start with them off the bench because they are not impact players. They are making the hard yards. They are making sure that. And I say the two power packs in Liam Finn and Jacob Munn are getting plenty of room from there, and then they could bring the other guys off the bench who make the impact, certainly in Fafita and Anakin from there. So he's got the right balance out at the moment, is Chester.
You said to me 6 weeks ago, St Helens went to Wakefield and brushed them aside, quite frankly. Young Richardson played at half-back. You said on that day,
Farge.
With Farge, if they kick Smith out of the team, they've got a chance.
Yeah.
And it was Smith and Lomax the other night, and he got it wrong, Holbrook, didn't he?
England's Johnny Lomax.
He's getting it. Holbrook is getting it massively wrong, and as I say, and all this hype with Benny Barber making his debut on Friday night, was that the right call? No, it wasn't, because all he's done is just absolutely messed up that said talent side. Farge and Richardson, not even anywhere near the bench, man. We just totally dropped from there. Johnny Lomax is not a standoff. He's been tried there, tried, tested and failed. Benny Barber, who's not played rugby league for, nearly 12 months now, and whatever, from there, come back from... He's just totally, totally lost the plot. Barber should, if he was going to play there on Friday night, should have maybe come off the bench. Lomax is a fullback, but why disrupt? Why disrupt your side with your two best quality halfbacks in Farge and Richardson? Marty Smith is not good enough. He's finished, Matt, for me now. Marty Smith is bringing nothing to St Helens whatsoever, and Holbrook's getting it wrong. Yeah, 6 weeks ago, St Helens actually murdered. They murdered Wakefield from there, and the style of play what they played, Richardson, when he came on at Headingley, it just showed what he can do. So why the
But again, did Holbrook get that wrong, leaving him on the bench for 73 minutes?
He's just getting it totally wrong by bidding young Richardson. And I say, putting Lomax, and all they're doing is compensating for Ben Barber. Well, how can they do that when he hasn't played for 12 months from there? Forget about it being a derby and all this sort of thing. Quite, it didn't matter if he was going to be playing a lesser side. He should not have played, he should have been on the bench. But Holbrook is getting it wrong by disrupting that side. And as I say, Matty Smith is not good enough for St Helens.
Calls for a clear out from the fans earlier, weren't they, on social media?
Well, they would have been furious on Friday, not because they're getting beat by Wigan, you know, but we all know where the derby from there, but you know, he's just getting it wrong, and they compensated for one player and just disrupted the whole side. Johnny Lomax is a fullback. He's nowhere near a standoff. Nowhere near.
Be alongside George Williams for England in the World Cup.
He's got his
ambassadorial contract.
And I'll tell you what, you know, all this hype with Benny Barber, is he that good?
Will he be back in the NRL, Steve? Is that why Barber's here, just to pave the way?
I think a lot of players would like to go back to the NRL, but I think it's probably too soon to... I only saw the highlights the other night. I'm surprised that try was given, that Barber was given, but I think a lot of guys would like to go back, who, you know, and they're looking to rebuild their careers here. I'm sure Ben Barber's... No different, but...
Do you expect it to happen, or do you think he'll be a Saints player next year?
Oh, no, I don't think he'll be back in the NRL next year. No, I don't think it was. And I think, I'm pretty sure he was suspended by the NRL, but the infraction was at Cronulla, so, you know, he just had to serve that. Oh, you know what would be really interesting is that, you know, with the 12-week suspension, what if he actually had served it here without playing a game, then trying to go back to the
Cliff Lyons,
which was attempted to do. But you know, he certainly, the NRL didn't even think about the idea of him playing overseas. They're like, 12 weeks. No, he's got to serve 12 weeks and he comes back. Yeah, but he's playing rugby league over here. It's the same sport. So how does the suspension work? And they're like, they took weeks to get back to, you know, St Helens and the RFL about it. So, obviously you would hope they don't try to make him serve the 12-week suspension again. But, no, I think he's... I don't think he'll be back in the NRL next year. I think he'd have to do his time, as it were, and I think he'd definitely beat St Helens next year. I'd be very surprised if he went back to the NRL next year. Mm. I'd be surprised if they registered him. I mean, even all these years later, there's still... Would Todd Carney even be registered in the NRL if he asked? You know, like, there's still doubt. So, yeah, I don't think Ben Barber will be back next year.
Okay. Who's going to make the four, then?
It's in Wakefield's hands, because the two that would be the pretenders.
They've got a tough run in.
Yeah, but they've got St Helens and Wigan.
And Hull.
Yeah, but I reckon if they beat St Helens and Wigan, they're in the top four. Those are the two teams that are chasing them. So it's in Wakefield's hands, which is a fantastic position to be in with only three rounds of the season
Rich,
to go.
Rich, are they going to do it?
If they win this week, yes. If they don't, possibly.
It could be down to five this week. If Hull were to beat Wigan and Wakefield were to beat St Helens, it's going to be a big ask.
I'll tell you what, Wolfie, for sure, the fans who are on tender hooks at the moment will be the black and whites. They will, because Wigan, and as I say, on Friday night, I saw my old mate Sean after the game, only on television.
He didn't invite you in for a sherry and his...
As people know that he doesn't speak to me anymore, but whatever. But after the game, when you saw Sean rubbing his hands, and when you saw Sean smile, that wasn't because they got the victory in the derby. That was because this is where we want to be. This is the business end of the season. This is what we love. This is what the players want. This is what I keep telling about. This is the pressure games. Tell you what, the Hull fans at this moment in time, they'll be a little bit apprehensive, because we can go there. We all know what happened 2 weeks ago at Wembley from there. This is the business end of the season. This is the sort of pressure games what Wigan want. And he could see that on Sean's face on Friday night, with the smiles, with the confidence, what he's got from there. He's been saying to us, there's plenty more to come out of that dressing room. Friday night, when they were in that dressing room, they'd have been saying, forget about everybody out there. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter about anybody else. We know what we've got in here. And I'll tell you, you can't rule out Wigan. And what I saw Sean Wayne on Friday night was, yeah, we're coming to get you.
But if we believe what Hull said at Wembley, their season is not run. This is almost as big a game as winning at Wembley. That if they want to take this mantle of, we're now breaking into the top four teams, we want to have consistency of performance.
They have to win because Hull are going out of the top four.
Wigan will go above them if they lose, but they'll have to do it without Gareth Ellis, it looks like.
Darren said it. It's the nightmare scenario, but it's probably the one that will sell the most tickets. It's all set up because you've got Castleford in there, who have not performed in semi-finals at this level in a long time. Wakefield obviously have never been here for a long, long, long time. Hull, last time they were in this position last year, were awful at Wigan. Awful last time they got to the grand final. It's all set up to be Leeds versus Wigan.
You say sell the most tickets. I think a Cass Hull final would sell out Old Trafford. And I mean sell it out.
Miss out, that's the
I think the great thing about Cass is that they're the neutrals team because of the way they've played this year. So a lot of people would want to be there to see them playing.
Well, the scenario here is, you know, for the top four, is because the top two, Leeds are going to beat Salford in 2 weeks' time. If Leeds get beat by Cass, they'll beat Salford next week. So Leeds are going to finish in the top two. So the worst scenario then, certainly for Castleford, is if Wakefield finish third, and Wigan finish fourth. If Wigan finish fourth, Castleford don't want Wigan.
I don't want to ask any questions, but Castleford play Hull on the final game of the regular of the Super Eights. Now these Goodell Powell's thought process ahead of a huge semi-final.
Be careful.
Yeah, do we want them to finish fourth and play them again, or do we want them to finish third and avoid them?
Do you want them to miss out and play Wigan? I'm asking the question. Well, and Daryl Powell's sole priority will be to win every game. I think he'll be making sure on Thursday night in the semi-final he's got all his players available.
In the AFL, I think they call it tanking, and basically they've got a draft, and the bottom team gets the first draft pick. So if you're out of the running for the finals, it's well known in the AFL that they actually try to lose.
Suck for luck.
You know,
Indianapolis Colts. That's what they did, wasn't it? Yeah. So get the better draft pick.
Well, one thing for sure here, Castleford will not want Wigan. They will not want Wigan. They won't, you know, so... That's a good thing. I didn't know Cass would play home in the last game.
Yeah, but that's not a criticism of Cass. It's like Leeds have got Huddersfield. Huddersfield won't have anything to play for, but Brian McDermott will do what is right for Leeds.
I fully buy into that as well, you know, and I say it's like Leeds, do they want all to finish further from there? Castleford, ideally, because Wakefield, they can beat, whoever finishes, if it's Leeds, Hull and Wakefield. Wakefield can beat Leeds or Hull, but Wakefield can't beat Cass. Wakefield, unfortunately, you Wakefield fans, you can't beat Cass.
You went pretty close a couple of weeks ago.
Cass is just too good and too smarty from there. So
Wakefield fans celebrating already.
Wakefield won't want Cass, but apart from that, Wakefield could beat. I would say they could beat anybody on the day for the 80 minutes from there. But it's anybody from four, is it?
Who's in the four then? Come on, who's in the four?
It's Cass, Leeds. Wigan, Wakefield.
No Hull.
Wigan and Wakefield. No Steve Mascord, where are you going?
Well, you guys seem to have the whole draw that's not much of it left in your heads, and I don't have the whole draw.
It's there.
Okay, but, I'm not going
to
go
for it. We'll come back to you,
It's going to be very boring radio
we'll
if I go.
We'll come back to you. Richard, where are you going?
Cass, Leeds, they're the easy ones. No, I'll stick with Hull and Wakefield. Nothing
Phil?
Will change.
Cass, Leeds, Hull, but... I am absolutely not sure. I think it's going to go down to Wakefield playing Wigan in the last game of the season. The winner of that will be fourth.
It could all be over.
Can you imagine Wigan in Wakefield? Yeah, that's my team.
Wigan in Wakefield.
Imagine the look on Sean Wayne's face if Wakefield beat Wigan in the final game of the season. Oh, all the people out there are thinking we're all going to be Wakefield fans for the day.
That will fill the Beaumont Solicitor Stadium.
It'd be like when that plane went above the jungle saying, "Never, don't fear, it's only Kiev." It'd be like that all over again. It'd be great.
Well, we'll see. Steve, you've got a book coming out. That's why you're with us tonight. The book is called
Touchstones.
Touchstones. It's out tomorrow. Tell us all about it. Why have you written it? What's it about?
Well, I think it all started when people just said you should write a book. And I'm sure a lot of people have been told that by their friends. So I basically did two things to make myself finish the task because I had abandoned it a couple of times earlier. The first thing I did was I crowdfunded it, which meant I had to provide it because people would give me money. Second thing I did is I set myself a task of going to a game a week and a gig a week for 52 weeks. Again, it was just a function to make me finish it. And at that time, it was just going to be a bit of a jolly, a bit of a travel story, a reportage, a little bit of a few drinking stories. And then... But during the course of doing it, I sort of found out a little bit about my background. I was adopted, and I didn't know much about the first 3 months of my life. And as I found out more about this, I started to say, well, you know, like I was, if I hadn't been dumped in Wollongong, which is a rugby league town, you know, would I like rugby league? And even the sort of music I like, was that a function of, again, where I was brought up? So I think most of us in our identities, we kind of think, I'm this and I'm that. You know, I like that sort of music. I like that sort of sport. I hang around those sorts of people. Or that's my favourite colour. And then I started to go, well, actually, no, these are just arbitrary things because of my circumstances in my first 3 months. So it became a very different type of book to the one I intended, and it became a little bit about identity. You know, I started to go, well, okay, if that didn't happen, who would I be now? Would I still like these things? What do I like about these things? If I was going to start again, then what would I throw out from my life and my interests, and what would I keep? So it turned into a very different book to the one that I started.
When did you find out?
I knew I was adopted all my life. I knew I was adopted, but I was actually originally told it's a bit heavy for a rugby league show on a Monday night. But no, it's in the book, so it's public. But yeah, I was told that my natural parents had died in a car accident, and that actually wasn't true. My biological mother had actually spent a whole life searching for me, and I only found out when I got a phone call from my biological sister, who I didn't even know existed. That didn't happen during the course of this book. It happened a good deal earlier. But sort of immediately before I started the book, I started to meet my biological relatives and stuff like that. And my father was my grandfather was a surgeon. My grandmother was a socialite. Not the sort of upbringing where you'd be into the Illawarra Steelers and Iron Maiden. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you know, I kind of I like A lot of people, I guess, I saw that as who I was, and I saw that as a key to my identity, and it turns out that it was just a crapshoot that I ended up liking those things. Or was it? Would I have gravitated to those things anyway? So I actually created an alter ego, my birth name, Andrew John Langley, and I had Andrew John Langley in the conduct an audit of my life in the book. So I wrote about what I did, who I hung out with, what I did, and at the end of every chapter, Andrew John Langley says, you know, and so Andrew John Langley would have stayed on Sydney's North Shore, probably would have played rugby union, he'd been to indie music or folk music, and probably would be a season ticket holder at the Sydney Swans. You know, I'm like, that's me if I had of, you know, that hadn't happened. So there's a lot of elements to the book. It's probably in 2017, if you're trying to market a book, it's easy just to say it's about this, it's about the 1969 grand final, it's about AC/DC, and then people go, oh, I'll buy that. Whereas it's much harder to explain what my book's about because it's about a lot of different things. And if you just want it to be about rugby league, I'm sure you can still, well, you'll still enjoy it. It's not a tearjerker. It's not like that. It's not Days of Our Lives, you know, but there's a number of elements.
Quite emotional, though. I guess a lot of thought has, like you said, it's different probably to what you set out to do.
Yeah, and I would say people said they used the word cathartic, which is a great word, but it wasn't cathartic to actually write about this. It was cathartic to go through the process of thinking about it. So the writing about it came naturally because that's what I do for a living anyway. So it wasn't cathartic to sit down and I didn't like have tears in my eyes as I was writing, or I didn't laugh out loud or anything like that. But to actually go through the process of asking myself these questions, that was a really, I've had a Sydney Premiership media pass since 1986, and I would often go to four games in four cities in 4 days, you know, and I was obsessed, like, and there was the book is about obsessions, you know. This year I don't have an NRL media pass at all. And also I've been back in this country for a month and I don't think I've been to a single Super League game, and that doesn't worry me at all. So it's obviously I've benefited from the process. I'm not as uptight, and I'm not into box ticking. I'm not as alienly retentive as I was when I started the book. So the process has been good for me personally, but who cares? I'm trying to, you know, who cares about, well, what it's been like for me? I'm hoping that it's an entertaining book. The process, reading about it is going to entertain people, you know?
And Phil, you're publishing it. It's out tomorrow?
Yes, launching it tomorrow with Steve in Leeds. That's
please
the
come.
Northern launch. Do come. You'll be more than welcome. There'll be copies and coffee. I can remember the World Club, ill-fated World Club Championship in 1997, being with you at a game at Belmore for when Wigan played
Canterbury. Yeah.
And you left at half-time because there was another flight you had to get to the game the next day.
Yeah, I think I went to a game in Perth or...
And that's what he was like. That he itinerant, I think, was the word.
I used to go... There's actually no way, according to any airline schedules, to get from a Saturday night game in Townsville to a Sunday game in Perth. But what I would do is I would drive 5 hours from Townsville to Cairns, leaving at 11 p.m. after filing my copy, sleep about half an hour in the rental car, go and check in with no luggage to go to Sydney, and I would actually buy a ticket on a flight from Sydney to Auckland I had no intention of using, just to get through customs. And then with no luggage, I would go to the gate of the flight that was leaving in an illegal time frame. And when I say illegal, you can't book it as one ticket because the connection in Sydney is too tight. So you have to change terminals and everything. So I'd get off the plane from Cairns on no sleep, having driven all night. And then I would literally go to the gate and say, I've got no luggage, I'm gold, can you please let me on? And then I would walk in as the game was kicking off in Auckland. And I did that, four or five times, and one time I got the last seat and there was a screaming kid next to me, but I never failed to get on the flight, and I retired undefeated from doing that. I'll never try to do it again.
Very good. Sound like Scully after freebies. Huh?
It sounds easier than the 62 on a Friday.
It does. It does. Yeah, it does. Great stuff out tomorrow then, Touchstones. Is there a website, anything, Steve?
If you want to buy it online, you can buy it on the Scratching Shed site, or also on stevemascord.com. We're on Twitter, Touchstones Book, and also Facebook / Touchstones Book. And I've been taking Like, for instance, Mark Evans from Melbourne Storm and Rugby Union, I put up a video of him talking at the launch just before the show. So the social animal will live stream elements of the launch tomorrow. So I'm trying to do all that. I've learned.
Good job having my hair cut.
Yeah, exactly. I think more sort of is it Richard Gere more than James
Don't
Bond.
Encourage him, Steve. Come on.
My eyesight's pretty poor.
He looks well. He's the next James Bond.
I'm getting suspicious. Eh? I think he's got a meeting after this one.
It's Clooney. George Clooney.
Clooney? No, that's
Scully.
Great
box.
Great box.
Listen, I'm George Clooney, Steve. Come on.
Right, predictions. Wakefield, St Helens, live on Radio Yorkshire on Thursday night. Scully, who's getting the kiss of death?
Holbrook's got it all wrong. And they say Wakefield, they're just playing too well. And they say it's in their hands. They're not going to blow this opportunity for mine. I'm going Wakefield by 10.
Ooh, Steve.
St Helens to bounce back. Ben Barber, man of the match.
Typical Australian.
It would be really interesting to see if Justin Holbrook does alter the spine of his team. I suspect he probably won't. He'll be bloody-minded about it, and that'll play into Wakefield's hands, and they'll win narrowly.
Rich?
Wakefield by 4.
Wakefield by 4?
Well, I can't say anything else, can I, friend?
You could say Wakefield by 40.
Say Wakefield by... Well, actually, yeah, after stuffing Salford last week, they're no good. Saints no good. Salford by 28.
Yeah, England are behind, by the way, in the football. Slovakia have scored. Lobotka. We'll move on. No. Castleford Leeds.
You haven't told us who you think is going to win.
I'm going to go Wakefield. Got to do.
You've got to do.
Bandwagon's going to keep rolling.
The top four tour is on. The top four tour is on. Cass Leeds.
Yeah, Leeds haven't been Cass for a while, have they? And I can't say anything to you, to be honest with you, from there. I just don't think Leeds have got enough points, and from a creativity point of view from there. So I'm going Cass by 14.
Steve? I'm going to tip Cass, but I'm really pleased you're too polite to mention my choking column, the Cassifer choking column. I know in my absence you had an opinion on it, but I only said that because no one else had. I thought if you finish top, someone's got a pile of pressure on you. It's not normally my go, but I just felt someone had to, so there you
Fair
go.
Fair dues. No, that's all right.
But, yeah, I'm tipping Cass.
Yeah, I think Cass will win.
Those two banned from Cass, then allowed in on Friday. But because Leeds are going to beat them in the grand final, unless Wakefield get there, Cass by 12.
Yeah, OK. Cass, yeah, I'll go Cass. Hull Wigan, this is a big one.
This is a big one. And as I mentioned, you know, certainly with the expression of Sean Wayne, rubbing his hands, a smile on his face, this is their time of the season. This is what they want. This is the business. They're the holders. I'm going Wigan to win by 8.
I think they've got a decent record as well at the KCOM, if memory serves correct.
I'm going Wigan by 8. Sorry, Hull fans.
Steve?
Wigan by 1, late drop goal.
That has happened a few times in recent years.
I think Sean Wayne will be playing the revenge card, whereas most coaches try and play that down and go, no, it's not about revenge. I think they just don't tell us. Yeah, he would be standing in that dressing room every day this week saying, this is about losing in the Challenge Cup final. Go out and show them what you can do. Hull by 2.
If it's the Samkins who played against Saints, then we're going to win. If it's the Samkins who played at Wembley, Hull will win. Draw.
I'm going Hull. Salford Huddersfield, well, we're going to move on past that one. I want to have a look at what's going on in the qualifiers.
That's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Oh, come on, man.
Huddersfield will beat Salford. Quickly, Huddersfield will beat Salford.
Yeah.
Huddersfield.
Yeah, I think there'll be more points than the crowd in the ground.
Giants by 24.
Hull KR Widnes.
Well, Widnes are just swell. They're hitting the form at the so-called right end of the season, the business end of the season, to keep the Super League going from there. But I just feel as though Hull KR Rovers, this is what they prepared for all pre-season. This is where they've wanted to be. And I say, will they blow it? Steve Mascott's saying regarding Casper being chokers, will Hull KR choke it on Saturday? They've got 3 goes at it, but I reckon this could be the best chance. All right, Catalans the week after from there, but I'm going Hull KR Rovers on Saturday to get themselves back into Super League.
Steve?
Widnes.
I think if this game was at Widnes, I would go for Widnes, but because it's at Hull KR, because there'll be 8,000, 9,000 fanatical Rovers fans willing them on, because Tim Sheens has been employed for this 80 minutes, possibly the 80 minutes next week, I think Hull KR will just snatch it.
It's more important for Widnes, isn't it? Because you'd expect Catalans to meet Featherstone later that same day. Hull KR.
Having seen the atmosphere at Fev yesterday, I think Hull KR, that support was fantastic. Warrington take on Lee.
Well, it's just inconsistency at Lee, isn't it? But Warrington, what they'll need to do, they'll need to give Lee a bit more respect than what they give London, certainly for the first 40 minutes on Saturday night from there. But yeah, Warrington, they'll just want to make... They told us we were talking about going 7 on the bounce. Yeah, Warrington to beat Lee by 14.
Warrington. Yeah. But closer than 14. Closer than 14.
Okay. Yeah, I think the... Was it 12 minutes that Warrington played at the start of the second half where London couldn't get the ball off them and they scored, was it 4 tries on the bounce? That's that's the Warrington that will probably play this week, and if it secures Super League status, Warrington.
The Wire.
Yeah. And the one I want to look at, London, Halifax, must win for London.
Yeah, must win, yeah. I say Halifax, they've no chance now, so a must win just for to keep maybe that light at the end of the tunnel from there. So, yeah, London for mine, and I'll go London by 24.
Wow.
You know, it's interesting, London fans the other night, just talking to a few of them, that they think it would have been a year too early to go up this year anyway. So they're kind of philosophical. And the thing is, I think the people who do support London are actually quite happy with their lot. They like going every second week, and they're almost scared of Super League. So,
well, they're competing now, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they've got a good squad. It's interesting, Adrian Purtell was there in the crowd on Saturday night. I had a brief chat to him. I think London, an easy win. And I would have liked to have, you know, if they'd won the other night or even got a point, I mean, would have liked to have seen them in the £1 million game, but alas, not.
Yeah, London, but more importantly, Toronto will beat Barrow and get promoted to the Championship.
Okay, good stuff. That is pretty much us. So you going London as well?
Yeah, I was just trying to work out if we can still make the £1 million game, which they can mathematically.
Of course they can. If they win this weekend, of course they can.
This is the great thing. We all
stand. There'll be a point behind Lee, and they've got to play Lee yet, so they are back in it.
Everyone said the eights were too complicated,
don't they? Yeah, they do.
It's exciting. Mm. It's exciting.
They do. That loss against... is really...
That's what's hurt.
If they'd have had 2 points, it'd be a win behind it, and they've got a better points difference than the other two. But that is life. Wakefield Saints Thursday night, 7 o'clock. Scott will be there about 5:30 for his chip putty. Friday is Castleford against Leeds. Should be another cracking week here on Radio Yorkshire. Thanks to Steve for joining us. Good luck with the book.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
You are welcome at any time. You know that.
That's good.
Nigel Wood will be in your seat next week. So we'll see how that goes. If you want to tweet in the questions, get in touch at RL on OI. Don't forget, we're giving away on Wednesday 2 tickets to go watch Wakey Saints, courtesy of Michael Carter. You can get those free. All you got to do is socially interact with the show, retweet the podcast. Thousands of you are listening to it every week now, which is really pleasing for us. Keep your eye out on the last tackle. I don't think that is it. Any more, Rich? Have we done and dusted?
No, I think that's it. I think everyone's gone to watch the football now, which is a shame.
Well, England are losing, so...
Can't wait for the proper World Cup coming up.
You can download the podcast and listen to us again in about 10 minutes. Phil, thank you. Hope your meeting goes well. Rich, thanks as always. Scully, the legend, thank you too. Thanks to Steve as well. Thanks to each and every one of you that takes the time to listen every week. We really do appreciate it. We'll be back next week. Promises to be an absolute belter. See you then.